This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 42 for Thursday, February 11, 2010. Oh, what a feeling. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for Out of Line After Hours at the iTunes store.
Welcome to Out of Line After Hours, our favorite place to be every Thursday night. We're glad that you're joining us. It's great having all of you with us. And as I start off every show, I'm here with Mr. Auto Extremist again, Peter DeLorenzo. Peter, great having you here again.
John, good to be here as always.
And David Welch is in the building. David, great having you here.
I think this is as close as I've been to being on time without actually being late. It was about 30 seconds before. Great to be here, of course, John.
Yeah, and back by popular demand, because we demanded that you be here tonight. Jason Vines.
Good to be here.
So, and the reason we demanded that you be here is because this Toyota stuff is just going crazy. And we got to talk about how Toyota's been handling it or not handling it and what they should be doing. And, of course, Jason, one of the reasons we wanted to get you in here is been there, done that. In your case, you were at Ford when Explorer started to go sunny side down.
Thanks to Firestone Tires.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. We'll have to talk about that later.
We'll have to slap you later.
Jason, you don't work there anymore. It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. You can tell us the truth now. But just instant reaction with what's going on at Toyota. Boom, you're on.
How they doing?
Yeah.
They're doing okay. They're not doing great. They're doing okay. Early on, I knew this was going to last a long time when I saw their supplier throwing them under the bus from the get-go. That's not good.
Or did they try to throw the supplier under the bus?
And then, of course, NHTSA, trying to deflect criticism, started talking about how they forced Toyota to do this. That's not good. This is all a lot of cover.
Ray LaHood getting out there saying, I told those guys.
Right? Yeah, and he was out there unrehearsed.
Yeah, he needs to stop talking.
Reckless. You don't want to tell consumers, park your cars, and then say, oh, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean park your cars.
That was unbelievable that a government official could basically create what dealers told me was hysteria.
Yeah.
You know, people calling off the hook, oh, come, I won't even drive it to the dealership, come take it away, and all this sort of thing. And
so did he misspeak himself, or was that deliberate on his part?
He said he misspoke.
Well, what do you think?
I think he was up at the podium or wherever he was when he was quoted, and he got carried away.
Well, yeah, but he
realized these guys speak in hyperbole at times.
Yeah, but he has a pattern of doing that. He came to the Detroit show and said, "Love to see all the great new Chryslers here," and everyone, Ray, no new Chryslers.
It's okay. On the Une, right?
Yeah.
I tell you what, a real wild card here, and I mentioned it to you on the phone, is State Farm Insurance.
Yeah, go through that, because this is fascinating.
It came out a few days ago that State Farm, because they have an incredible database, gave that information months ago, if not further.
Toyota
was having these issues. Now, did they do it for pure philanthropic needs? No, they do it because they see problems out there, potentially defective equipment, so that they don't have to pay claims. Now, where I find this fascinating is that Ford Firestone, State Farm sent data to NHTSA long before the crisis hit, and NHTSA ignored it.
Did Ford know about it at the time?
We did not. It went to NHTSA. And so,
couldn't they be liable for not making you guys aware, or is it good enough just to give it to the government?
Well, not State Farm wouldn't be liable. They were doing good work. They were going to the National Safety Agency.
Don't they tell the automakers?
At the time, remember, the warranty on a tire was the only part of the vehicle that was not warranted by the car maker.
In Ford's case.
No, in everybody's case. That was part of the Tread Act that came out of the Ford Firestone crisis. The Tread Act said that you had to be warranted by the
tire maker. Right.
Right. You always had in your glove box a tire warranty.
Right. No, what I'm misthinking is Ford did not do its own tire testing.
They did.
And did not set their own specs.
They did.
Whereas General Motors did. Well, or at least that's what General Motors claimed.
No, General Motors was playing a little hanky-panky there with the facts. They did testing, usually independent testing in California on these tires. But they did, shame on them for not knowing, they did rely on the expertise of the tire maker. And that's what really burned Ford. But Ford had no claims. They had no data. They begged Firestone to give them data.
It had started popping up in Venezuela.
It started in the Middle East and in Venezuela. And what do those two countries have in common, those two parts of the world?
Hot.
Hot, crappy roads, bad maintenance. What the people in Saudi Arabia were doing.
And no extradition treaties.
Huh?
And no extradition treaties.
That's true. I knew that. What they do in Saudi Arabia before they go across the desert, they'd reduce the tire pressure to get more traction on the sand. And then they get on the highway and not put it up. So you're incredible amount of heat. And the Ford folks were sending the tires that were destroyed over to Firestone in Japan saying, what's going on here? What's going on here? I'm getting lots of complaints. Same thing in Venezuela. What's going on here? Firestone would shoot back, bad roads, bad maintenance, until Ford finally acted in May of 2000 and said, we're recalling first the tires in Venezuela over Firestone's dead body. Mm-hmm. Ono said, I won't do this. And Jack Nasser said, I'll do it with you or without you. And he did. And that's what started NHTSA really getting serious about it in this country. Mm-hmm.
So why didn't NHTSA get involved earlier in the Toyota issue?
I guess you're going to find that out in the congressional hearings. Yeah. And I'm sure they'll deflect and say we didn't have credible evidence. This is why this is a real crapshoot. Toyota's not out of it. Nobody's out of it. Not that this is the end-all be-all, these congressional hearings, but what comes out of there could determine how much worse this becomes.
Well, and there's a disconnect between the managers in Japan and their U.S. operations. I mean, it's a cultural divide. It's just not the Toyota way. They think it's, we'll handle it. It's not going to, you know. And they didn't get out in front of it because they didn't really believe it. It was just like, it's a minor blip.
A retired Toyota executive whose name all of you would instantly recognize told me that.
Did it rhyme with Cress?
No, really, no. That I'm not going to get in the process of illumination here, but it wasn't Jim Press. Just said, and I said, you know, why this is anti-Toyota because they're supposed to be the company that takes care of their customers and, you know, people first and all this sort of thing. And he just said, listen, and this is just speculating on his part, but he said, you know, chief engineers at Japanese companies are very proud men.
Well, they're revered, too.
Yeah. So you're talking about major problems for their top-selling vehicles, something like this, and admitting that there's a problem when, let's face it, I mean, and this is often the case with safety recalls, the number of incidents compared to the number of vehicles sold is very small.
It's a needle in a haystack.
So the engineers are saying, you know, what are you talking about here? And, I mean, I'm not saying that's what Toyota did, but I think that can frequently be the case. It's, you know, we have so few incidents. And remember also, the first one, the formats, it took them a very long time to figure out what it was. This was, that whole thing started back in September, and they didn't have a recall on that. Was it
October.
January?
No, October. I thought the floor mat was in October, the first. But what engineers try to do is they try to put a fence around the population of affected vehicles, and they want to get the smallest fence they can. What happened with Toyota is the fence kept breaking, and more vehicles would get into it.
Well, they found things. They know that there is, in certain models, if you don't have the floor mat right, they know that floor mats can jam. They know with this CTS, not the car, but the supplier, gas pedal assembly, under certain circumstances, you can get condensation, it can get sticky. But there's still this whole issue out there that hasn't been addressed of electronic throttle control. And is this stuff going kaflooey?
The ghost in the machine.
And what no one's bringing up is how much of this could be driver error. Because when you go back to the Audi unintended acceleration problem in the 80s, NHTSA pretty much concluded 100% was driver error.
Well, no. 95% because they were bad placement of those vehicles, they determined.
You mean the pedals?
The pedals.
Well, you know what Audi did, though, is when they, you know, because back then Audis were, majority were manual transmissions. And when they came to the U.S. market, they left the pedals where they were for the manual transmissions, which means the brake is a little closer to the gas than in American cars.
And one other critical thing is this is at a time when Audi was making great conquests amongst Buick and Oldsmobile buyers.
Yeah.
And if you look at the typical GMB car of the day, its brake and gas pedal were slightly to the right of where the Audi ones were. So when you put your foot where you thought the brake should be in an Audi, if you weren't paying attention, you could hit the gas.
I was in high school at the time, but what someone told me on this was that Audi cars also idled pretty high at the time. And back then, you didn't have to put your foot on the brake to throw an automatic car into reverse or drive. And people would put their Audi in reverse, because remember, a lot of these claims were reverse sudden acceleration. They put it into reverse without a foot on their brake, and they would be startled by, because they idled kind of high, how quickly they'd start going back. And because of what John was just talking about with the pedals, they jammed their foot where it was.
And it was the accelerator.
Yeah.
And the harder I pushed on the brake, the faster it went, almost every one. Now, that was
the improvement that came out of that, by the way, was now every car has, you got to put your foot on the brake to throw
shift
it into drive.
Shift lock mechanism.
But no.
Right out of that.
You're wrong.
This is what Jim Hall told me.
Not every car. Because the next major sudden acceleration was Jeep. Jeep Grand Cherokees and Cherokees in the 90s. And it was always pedal misapplication.
They did not have shift lock.
But they did not have brake shift interlock.
Because that was probably a truck and that regulation
almost
came later.
Every other truck on the market at the time had it. And that was the fix that Chrysler did. I was handling safety PR. And it cost Chrysler, I think, $120 million to retrofit all those vehicles.
Right. But going back to the Audi thing, you're right, David. You could have high idle situations on some cars in the wintertime, but they had plenty of unintended acceleration problems.
That's what it was. It was cold
weather. It's literally the choke on. It's running rich. It runs higher. But they still had plenty of people killing themselves, you know, running through the backs of their garages.
Running off a cliff.
And like Jason says, the harder I pushed on the brake, the faster the car went.
Car wash accidents.
So how much, coming back to Toyota, isn't it possible that all this talk of, it's the electronic throttle control is nothing more than driver error?
It very well could be. And the thing about it, these things happen so fast, and they're panic situations, and people are sure I was pushing the brake. So unless they can really isolate one.
Drivers are so attentive anyway.
Yeah, when they're texting.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I swear, I was texting my buddy Elmer, and all of a sudden the car just took off.
I know about ETC, or electronic throttle control, because I wrote a lot about it early in my career when it was first coming out. And if I remember right, Mercedes was the first one to have it on the SL. That was the big thing, electronic throttle control. And they would not bring it to the United States. We still had linkages with cables and all that. And I said, why? You know, you're talking about better fuel economy, better emissions, better drivability, blah, blah, blah. They went, yeah, and you Americans will sue us the minute there's any kind of an accident. And your plaintiff attorneys will drag the bereaved widow into the courtroom in front of the jury and say, it was the computer that screwed up here. And so Mercedes waited about 5 years before they brought electronic throttle control to the United States just to build up a body of evidence in Europe that the stuff works fine, there's no problem with it, so that they could use that in a court of law in the United States. And they knew they were going to get sued over it.
Yeah, at the same time, I'm not willing to dismiss it completely here because, you know, think about when BMW and Mercedes first brought iDrive and Command to this market, and there were glitches left and right. Now, when there are glitches with your nav system or your downloadable music, it's irritating, and you go to the dealer, and you don't know how to, you know, fix it or get it to work right, and maybe he needs to, you know, refresh the hard drive or update a version of the software. You know, it's a customer service issue. But when it's safety, there could be glitches in the system. We don't know. And problems is if it is electronic or software related, it's extremely difficult to replicate to narrow it down to being that even in a lab.
But I guarantee you, if Toyota truly is having a problem with electronic throttle control, I guarantee you just about every other automaker is too, because they're all pretty much trying to design the same sort of systems. And if there's a problem to one, it's probably across the board. And no one, to my knowledge, not a supplier, not a car company, not any safety agency anywhere in the world has been able to replicate this. And that's why I'm just raising the issue. Isn't it possible this is just people putting their foot on the wrong pedal.
Well, I think there's obviously a component of driver error. I like to go back, though, that I think that the Japanese corporate mindset within Toyota would not allow them to get out in front of this. They just wouldn't. And, you know, Jason can speak to this better than I can. But, you know, the fact that they sort of delayed and sort of dragged their feet is now just killing them.
Yeah, almost every interview that I've been asked that question, and you don't want to sound xenophobic or anything, but when I was at Nissan for the time that they were bankrupt, the Japanese executives put their head in the sand and said, this will pass. And it wasn't until Ghosn came in with Renault and said, it's not going to pass. We need to fix it now and close plants and so forth. And he saved the company. And then flash forward a year or two later, and we had the same attitude from the Bridgestone-Firestone executives. You know, they'd apologize in a hearing and bow, and then the next day the American PR people say he didn't apologize. And they were slow. They would blame everything. Part of it, I think, is culture, where they're famous positively for the slow plotting development, so it's perfect.
Consensus.
That's right. But it's killing them now in having to react quickly to a crisis.
Sure. The news cycle is much faster than their decision process.
And now I don't know who the representative or the congressperson is wanting Akio Toyota to come and testify, and that'd be a disaster.
What would you do?
Well,
because you had Jack Nasser get up there in front of Congress.
This is a tough one, because in Ford Firestone, Ono was the first guy to testify in front of the Senate.
And he's from Bridgestone Firestone?
Bridgestone Firestone, chairman in the North America, who had been the head of the plant for Decatur, where they made the really bad tires. He was awful. I felt sorry for him, to be honest. It was just
his English was not good.
His English was horrible. My Japanese is better,
and which is non-existent.
Hi, and he was awful. We had Jack. Jack was prepared. Jack's smart. Jack didn't take any crap.
But didn't Jack at first turn down Congress?
This was a really bad move on the Washington office of Ford, who supposedly had they had cut a deal.
You're the vice president of corporate communications. Right?
Read it in the book. The Washington office was saying, nope, we've cut a deal with Billy Tozen, who was the head of the committee.
Guy from Louisiana.
Yep. And he's going to accept our testimony from Helen Petroskis, sweet lady, may she rest in peace, and Tom Bothman, who was head of the Explorer program, who were the real experts, even though they had called for Nasser. Well, so they cut a deal, they were going to blast us for an hour, and then they'd accept it. The news comes out that Jack can't do it. I hold a press conference. I said, Jack's too busy going around the world getting tires. Tozen goes nuts, breaks the agreement, keeps blasting. His spokesperson is calling us every name in the book. Jack Nasser can get on national TV but can't come to Washington. He doesn't care. And that day it broke. Jack was so ticked. We had a special meeting. He goes, what happened? I said I'd testify. And I said, well, you're basically viewed as a coward out there. I used a little saltier language in the book about this. But he goes, what should we do? And I said, you got to testify. So we had a press conference an hour later, and we announced that Jack was going to go. And he was, I thought he was fantastic. He was feisty, didn't take any crap, and he stayed with the facts. And when Tozen tried to get silly, he nailed him on it.
Why didn't Bill Ford testify? Because I've heard that Jack was, you know, chomping at the bit to get in front of him, and he wanted to do it.
No. We knew Jack was running the whole thing. He was a CEO. This is probably the first time this has been told. We did not want to put Bill Ford out there and have the family scion torn apart by this circus court. He was the heir, and we couldn't have that. And Bill was not as well-versed in any of this. We're taking a lot more preparation, and nothing against Bill. He's a great guy. But I think they would have chewed him up and spit him out for the sport of it. And that would not have been fair to Bill, and it wouldn't have been good for Ford Motor Company.
Okay, here we are a decade later. Do you still think the same thing, that it was right to put Nasser there and not Bill Ford?
Oh, absolutely.
Didn't Nasser, though, I mean, there was a lot of questions I remember, a lot of people going, wait a minute, I thought an American ran
Ford.
Well,
that's the problem with our racist American society. When we did the first ads, which actually polled pretty well.
These are the TV ads that you ran with Jack Nasser.
We had him that Monday Night Football, but people would sit back going...
Well, the viewers need to know, if they don't know, that Jack was Lebanese descent, but with an Australian accent.
Oh, he's pure Aussie.
Yeah, pure Aussie.
Late Neil Shine, who was the publisher of the Detroit Free Press, said, I wasn't looking at the screen. I thought it was an Outback Steakhouse commercial. But people were shocked that Ford Motor Company, this iconic American brand, but it was also a worldwide brand, had this guy. Then they didn't know the story behind him, that he started as a grade one employee and rose to CEO. And to be honest, he saved a lot of lives, and he took a bullet for it. He saved a lot of lives in that second recall. Our second ads were horrible because they turned cheesy. He goes, I have three Explorers of my own. And the comments people would write in when he said that was, sure, and I bet they have Goodyear tires on them. So that was the ad agency going a little crazy.
Okay, so full circle back to today. It's good to put on Akio Toyoda or not?
Well, here's my... It depends on how rabid these guys are in Congress. Because when, you know, the way they treated Ford at saying, how dare Nasser not show up, they've invited the chairman. If he doesn't, if they go rabid against him, they're going to look cowardly.
This is Daryl Issa who's doing it.
Who's from California.
Right. Yeah, but in Akio's defense, you know, he speaks English, but it's halting and it's almost not fair, you know.
If you're doing it for fairness sake, you want a eloquently spoken English speaker.
And that's Inaba.
Inaba's
really good.
I think they may get stuck. If Congress goes rabid, they may get stuck bringing them both, suggesting we'll both go. And perhaps have the chairman make a statement and then let Inaba answer most of the questions. And to be honest to me, that's the fairest because...
That would be...
But you got to have a Japanese guy up there, right? Because no one's going to believe that it's somebody who can make a decision otherwise.
Why hasn't Inaba been out there as the guy so far? It's been Lentz, and Lentz is a really nice guy. He comes across as a really nice guy who does care. He doesn't come across tough and decisive. And if he goes to Washington, I think Lentz would get ripped apart in Washington.
He might not. But again, when you're talking to an American at Toyota, you know they're not the top decision maker.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Congress wants is, hey, you built all these defective cars. You're killing our people. You better have the top guy explaining what's going on.
And remember what LaHood intimated was that the Americans were ready to go along with the recall, but he had to convince the Japanese. So they had to fly knits of people over to Japan to say, hey, this is serious, folks. This is your number one market.
Yeah. That's a good point. And by the way, that was a big screw-up in their initial PR because the American PR people and executives were saying, hey, we voluntarily did this recall. And then when the Japanese executive, the head of quality, had the press conference in Toyota City, he said he admitted, well, we sort of had to be nudged into it by the U.S. government. So
kind of blew that we're the good guys.
Not only that, but on Tuesday they recall the Prius in Japan. So I get on Autoline Daily and go, well, it's obvious what the next step is. You've got to recall them everywhere in the world, which they did the next day. So they guaranteed worldwide they're at the top of the headlines. And what's going on there, Jason? I mean, why don't you just cut your losses and make decisions that say, look, we can't just recall it in Japan. If we're going to recall it, we got to recall them everywhere.
Well, they're just taking a 1-2-3-day story and turning it into a month in their case. But now with the Corolla and all this, this is where the similarities with Ford Firestone. At the time of the Firestone tire crisis, Ford was having horrible quality problems. And recalling
The ignition switch on the F-Series, or was that later?
It wasn't then. It was a variety of vehicles. The small SUV, and the Focus was recalled like five times. It just seems like, you know, everything was just falling apart. Then, while the Explorer remained being the number one vehicle, we were all looking forward to the all-new Explorer coming out. Wider.
Lower.
Beautiful. Within a week or two of the launch, Ken Zeno, my number two lieutenant, who really was great during the recall and smart, he comes into my office and he goes, I have bad news. And I go, what? He goes, the worst. I go, the new Explorer? He goes, yeah. I go, how bad? He goes, the worst. I go, tires? He goes, yeah. At the assembly line, they didn't widen the assembly line.
Right. Oh, I remember that.
And it was cutting almost every Michelin tire that was going down the line. So we're thinking, oh, we started laughing, to be honest, because it was one of those you laugh or you cry.
Right.
You just can't.
I forgot about this.
But you know what I always thought, too, when that happened is that there must not have been good relations at the plant, because I guarantee you, having worked in the factories myself, there were line guys who knew, hey, those tires don't look so hot. They're getting cut up. I mean, I just can't believe nobody at the plant noticed. I think people noticed and kept their mouths shut.
Well, those were the stupidest people on the planet.
Well, I would tend to agree with you, but you know how it is in a factory. It's an us versus them mentality, and a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them.
By the way, another proof point that NHTSA is going to have some trouble with this with Congress. The day that they were talking about the Japanese government forcing a recall on the Prius, they did it based on 19 customer complaints in Japan. So I went on the NHTSA website and looked up the 2010 Prius. And when I went to press Wednesday at 5, I counted, and actually I did the count a little bit before that, but it was 111 complaints on the 2010 Prius just on the brakes. There were a whole bunch of others on the cruise control system.
Have you found the one on the headlights?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they go off.
The L.A. Times did this big story. And, in fact, we were talking with Jean Halliday, too, and she said they reported it even months earlier than that. Yeah, they just go out. And they have under warranty repaired 28,000 Priuses.
Here's what could really hurt them. If there is any whiff of a hidden recall in any of this.
Oh, well, you know there is.
And that's illegal. And that is could really send them...
Jeez, I'm more scared of the headlights going out than the brakes.
Or both.
Right.
Well, but the thing with the Prius, I mean, here you have, and by the time they issued the recall, there were well over, I think, 140 complaints on the Prius brakes. So it was building, and NHTSA wasn't flagging that. Now, I've heard that they're just really understaffed there, but, you know, I'm one journalist, I can get on their database. And by the way, okay, so you got 2010 model year Prius. I counted at that point 111 complaints, and I thought, well, how many complaints does a car have in a typical model year? So I looked up, Prius sells about 140,000 last year. The Chevy Malibu sells about 160,000 plus. So I even given Toyota benefit of the doubt, so I'm going to compare a car, same model year, even more volume. You know how many the Malibu had at that same point in time? Two. So I said, okay, there's a problem.
So what's the latest? Is the Corolla steering over 40 miles an hour suddenly veers to the left or right? That's the latest one.
Mm-hmm. Is that power electronic steering? It's electric steering, not a hydraulic one. Because Cobalt just had a recall on the steering, and it's also electric steering.
Ghost in the machines.
Well, that was always the thing that, this is what sets this one apart. The Audi, the Jeep Grand Cherokee, there was always the safety advocates who were saying there's a gremlin in here that's making him do this. And we proved that's not true.
Right.
If there is a gremlin in this one, that makes this one the first real case of sudden acceleration. Because until then, there was no such thing as sudden acceleration.
Well, the new Prius is the one that has a cruise control issue. Accelerates and can't.
Right. Steve Wozniak has talked about where he thinks there's a software glitch in the cruise control. But I think the bigger issue here is this electronic throttle control because, once you fix the floor mats and once you fix the pedal assembly, believe me, there's still going to be unintended acceleration problems. There are with other brands,
but there hasn't been a recall based on electronic throttle yet.
Well, NHTSA looked into this with Toyota 2 years ago. And they couldn't find anything. And that's why they didn't really press the issue
after
that. It's
not repeatable.
That's what I was saying earlier, is with software and electronics, it's tough for the engineers to even find it because it's not a repeatable.
But here's my thing, too, and I'm totally skeptical on this stuff. I'm willing to be convinced it can be electronic, but I've never had it happen. I mean, I don't know any of our compadres here in the automotive press who drive more cars than anybody else in the world and drive them in more places all over the world. I don't know anybody who's had this. Maybe now having said that.
I've had sudden acceleration in press.
You have?
So when I first started covering the beat, I was writing for the Dallas Business Journal. I was down, and I wrote the weekly car column. I was driving a Mitsubishi 3000 GT. And you know, I took it up on LBJ Freeway, which circles the city kind of at night, so I could really open up the throttle. And I'm going about 95, and I was intending to get up to about 120, 130 just to see, you know, how it would do. And it was a six-speed manual, and I put it into fifth, and I'm gunning the thing, and all of a sudden, I took my foot off the accelerator, and it just kept going. I mean, and it really, and the pedal was, it was a pedal thing. It was sticking. The pedal, and it did it a couple of times, and I took it back home, and the next morning, I just called the fleet service company and just said, hey, you got a problem, take it away, and I'd tow it. Because it happened to me a couple of times.
But see, to me, that's different. A sticking throttle is different than saying, I was backing out of the garage, and all of a sudden, it shot across the street and through my neighbor's living room. Or I was pulling into the driveway, and this thing just took off out of control.
Well, that didn't happen to Tiger Woods.
Oh, you believe that one, too, eh?
I'm hoping they'll prove that it's due to texting, so that they ban texting altogether.
Well, they're banning texting. I don't think that's going to stop people at all.
So how long do we think? I mean, I think this is going to hurt Toyota for a long time. I think before they used to be one tier above everybody else in the U.S. market. You know, people heard Toyota and the light bulb in their head went off and the words came quality, reliability, durability. They were cut above the rest. J.D. Power, it's always Toyota, always Toyota. Now, that automatic light bulb's not going to go off because, oh, well, wait a minute, you know, they've had a lot of problems. And so I'm saying now that Toyota has been busted down to the same level as everybody else. Of course, they will survive and overcome this. They're a global, gigantic manufacturer, and, you know, it's not the end of Toyota. But the difference now is, and why I believe it, is just another car company now. They don't have the halo anymore. And when they don't have the halo, people are going to shop a little more. You know, yeah, there's hardcore Toyota files, I mean, which is hard to believe, but I just love my Corolla. I'm going to get another one. But whatever. But I think they've been busted down, and now people are going to consider what else is out there. Quality is on a par for the most part. I mean, you're talking minute differences.
Except Chrysler.
Well,
I saw a study that I believe is coming out tomorrow. The big winner so far is Hyundai. And they're making out like bandits.
Well, I think Hyundai and Ford, to a lesser extent, even GM. Honda.
If you go by January sales, which is the only metric we have so far.
GM.
The big winner is Ford. The next big winner is Nissan. The Altima came within a couple of hundred units of knocking off
GM
the Honda Accord
really good,
as the best.
GM had a really good month.
Well, Chevrolet gained far more than the Ford brand did. Mm-hmm. Chevrolet was up like 58% for the month.
Do we know how much that was?
There was a lot of fleet going on in January.
So what?
But fleet needed fleet because all of Toyota fleet was parked.
That too. But, I mean, everybody puts fleet down. I mean, if I'm in the business.
I agree with you, Jan, about fleet, yeah.
Fleet, you can do it a stupid way and lose money, and you can do it smart
and make
money.
As I'm sort of trying to appraise how GM is doing, and you guys know I like a lot of their products, I think they do have a marketing issue, and if there is a lot of fleet baked in there, it tells me that even though they've got some good new products, they're still not getting through to a lot of consumers. I mean, it depends how much fleet there is. I don't have the
breakdown. This gives them a chance, though.
Yeah.
It gives everybody a chance.
At a minimum, the easy market share gains for Toyota, build it and they will come, that's out the window.
That's
the automatic recommendation,
not only that,
that's out the window.
On Tuesday, or was it Wednesday now?
Resale.
Or Thursday. Well, another recall for them. 540,000 units. What was it? I'm blanking out now.
What, for Honda?
For Honda, right.
Well, if you're another automaker, you're thinking about a recall, you do it now. Gets lost.
No, but I think it's piled on because, you know, Honda was the masters of announcing a recall at 5 p.m. on a Friday when everybody, you know, all the media's gone home, right, or in the process
of
leaving,
bar.
And everyone else is going out to party that night. And that's when Honda would always announce a recall.
Well, that's PR 101,
right.
You always announce it after everyone's in the bar.
Right, but now Honda's getting called out by the media, whereas, you know, literally 2 months ago, it would not have been.
Yeah, but that story was one day, and it was gone away.
But it's added to this impression that, oh, my God, this vaunted Japanese quality It's not just Toyota. Now even Honda's had a big recall.
Yeah.
It comes to your point, Peter, that I think it opens up the market. And my feeling is we may be on the verge of a Buy American movement.
Oh, I don't buy that. I think as companies like Nissan and Mitsubishi and Subaru have sort of taken a ride on the Japan quality train, even though at various points they didn't really have it. Only Honda and Toyota really had Japanese quality. The others sort of took a ride. I think it may cause people, Toyota's problems may cause people to look at the Japanese as more just in line with everybody else's quality. The Teflon comes off, but I don't think the Buy America. I think Americans want a good deal. If it's a Hyundai, that's the good deal and a good car, they're going to buy it.
Right. But I think it's going to have to be a Hyundai made in America. No. And that's the difference, is because I found it fascinating. The California legislature last week enacted legislation to say no more imports for state vehicles. They have to be made in America.
Yeah, but that's government money. It's a different thing.
But I think that mentality is reflective of some other thinking in the country, not
just... Did that go through, or is that was just brought up?
No, I believe it's been enacted.
That was one of the things that really burned the American automakers, that state governments in this country would buy foreign vehicles. It's like, whoa!
Your tax dollars are going
At least buy them, foreign brands, if they're made in your state, that's fine, but... To your point, why are we stimulating, jobs elsewhere, especially with cash for clunkers?
So the California thing is they have to be built in the United States?
They have to be built in the United States.
No matter what the brand?
Right. Look, I think the Japanese car makers in this country are at least going to go into a lull for a while, but for some very specific reasons. Toyota's reason, we know, they're on the ropes. Nissan just hasn't had a lot of, big new product launches lately, and, they sort of... Yeah, they maybe peaked out a little bit. I mean, the company's still doing well.
They got some good vehicles.
They do have some good vehicles, but they haven't had a lot of launches. They're going to pick up some at Toyota's expense, but they weren't red hot like they were. They sort of, their growth leveled off. And as far as Honda's concerned, I think Fat Bastard has got their mojo because they certainly don't have it anymore. I mean, look, it's a great anecdote. There's a California Acura dealer called the company and gave his franchise back.
Whoa!
Said he just didn't want to invest in it anymore. I heard this just the other day.
They have missed on Acura from the moment they did it.
But it's like the Acura blade is going to Honda because, the current Accord is a nice car, but it hasn't done it. The Civic and Fit are good, but what else in their line? I mean, this, the Insight, big flop.
Well, that
and the new hybrid is...
That Odyssey concept looked really good, the van.
You like that? I didn't like it at all.
I liked it better. Well, I'm not a van guy, so I liked it better than the current car.
Well, yeah, people who don't like vans, like sort of far-out vans, like Nissan did with the Quest. But, minivan buyers don't care about the styling of a minivan. They just
I didn't think the new Honda concept was that radical. I just thought it was cleaned up.
Hmm. I tell you what, where General Motors could take a lead and Ford is now the environmental mantle. Because you're going to find that not only is Toyota taking a hit on quality, it impacts all of the credits towards the company. We saw this at Ford during Ford Firestone. Even though it was an Explorer, the safety image of the Taurus went down. The environmental reputation went down. It has a compressing impact on a company. So this great lead that Toyota had,
it's gone.
And now GM's ads may really hit home when they say we have more vehicles that get over 30 miles per gallon than Toyota does.
This is, by the way, the story that should be up on the web now. It was supposed to be a cover story on all that we're talking about with Toyota and Ken Ford and GM, and to a certain degree Chrysler finally capital on this, and it gets into this thing. By the way, I didn't get the cover because on Tuesday, one of our Washington people got an exclusive interview with Obama. You try to compete for the cover when the president decides to talk.
This is when global warming was pounding the nation's capital with 17 feet of snow.
But, the green thing is right. And GM looks very smart for the May the Best Car Win campaign because that one Chevy ad where you have the parade of Cobalt, Malibu, Equinox, and I forget the fourth vehicle. It might be Traverse, maybe.
Probably.
And then you've got the four competing Toyotas, and it says Toyota has, the reputation for being, having the best fuel economy. So how do you explain this? And the fuel economy, it's not just beating them by one MPG. It's like 2-3.
Mm-hmm.
And, that ad now, and thank God for GM that they launched it like last September. I mean, if they tried to do it now, somebody would say they're piling on. But, you know, the timing is, you know, finally GM catches a break for the first time in a very long time.
I want to see Bob Lutz in an ad saying, Toyota owners, hurry down to your GM dealer.
Sadly.
Yeah. We should not. Now, we're giggling here on stuff. Like, there's people that have died, and this is much like Firestone and Ford again. You know, a couple hundred people died during that.
Well, you know, I just think that, you know, and I've got readers getting violent with me, you know, saying, you know, but they don't understand this image thing. And this image thing is fragile.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't care. It's been three decades of Toyota going up and up and up, and now all of a sudden it's been blowed up real good. And as John Candy so eloquently put it. But, you know, and it's gonna be a long time. Before, they may never recover. I mean,
no, they'll recover because, look,
but no, I'm
Jason
saying
said Ford, that
they will
right?
never
recover. 10 years ago, yeah, but 10 years ago, everybody went, oh, look at Ford.
But Toyota will never recover to be a over and above everybody else. They will certainly recover. Yeah, they're going to make $1 gazillion and they're going to sell a lot of cars, but they're never going to be able to pull themselves up above
that I
the
would
other
agree
makers.
With. That I would agree with.
That's what I mean when I say never recover.
They're not the only team in the major leagues and everybody else is in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Right. They're all...
Right. Hey, it's time for rapid fire. Ben, bring it up.
The tabernacle.
Okay, we've got one here that says, great to see Jason back. Please ask him, for all of us who are changing careers, if there's been any similarities between his new job in publishing and the auto business. And that's from Michael Ridgely from Maryland.
Interesting.
Or Michael Shipley from Ridgely, Maryland.
Well, I found that competition is brutal. It's an industry that's lost a lot of market share. Sound familiar? The thing that's different is I have not found a Bible that leaks oil. So I kind of like that.
That might be miraculous if you find
it.
You haven't had to recall any because there were typos on page 2067?
Actually, I think there have been pullbacks of books taken off the market due to a protest or something like that. But it's a really brutal industry right now.
The publishing?
Publishing is absolutely brutal.
Why? Because like print in general, everything's cratering?
Book sales are off generally in this country about 25 to 30%.
Yow.
It gets impacted. And, of course, now we have... an industry that's changing as more and more e-books and
I was gonna say, how are you doing with Kindle and all that stuff?
We do it. The new iPad, we already had all of our books to that system on EPUB. But the question is, with the Amazon.coms and the Walmarts almost giving the stuff away, it's the whole internet question. How do you make money off of this stuff?
Right.
So it's a real...
Profits don't matter. Remember that cry?
Yeah, the good news is we're owned by News Corp. So I get to work for Rupert.
Yeah.
Okay, Asia Martin wants to know, both media and some of the public blame Toyota wholly for this issue. What about CTS, the supplier? What about all the many little suppliers that account for the brakes, the pedals? Why not the other manufacturers? GM, Ford, even Honda use some of these same suppliers, yet none of the fingers point at them. What's up with all of this?
I don't know that none of the fingers point at CTS. They've taken a pretty good lambast in the press over this thing. And, you know, Toyota very subtly threw them under the bus.
Now, CTS threw Toyota under and then Toyota threw CTS.
No, I think it was the other way around.
The other way
because
around.
Nobody knew that CTS was the supplier until Toyota said, here's the supplier that made pedal assemblies that are causing all the problems.
Mistake number one, you never blame it on a supplier because the customer's not buying the supplier's car.
But as, doesn't care what the customer
But as John pointed out, they build stuff to Toyota specification.
And by the way, Toyota inspects it. They put it on their car, and they sold it with a Toyota warranty on it.
Right. There you go.
Customer doesn't care.
It's a lesson learned from Ford Firestone. The customer gets really angry when you get in a fight with the supplier when they got a vehicle that may kill them. We didn't want to do that. Honestly, Firestone forced our hand.
Okay, John Kajawa says, on CNBC this week, Mark Royce was asked, Toyota's been beating you for years in the market. Why don't you go after them and gain market share? He replied that GM would go after the market, but in a professional manner, based on its products, and not embarrass Toyota. And then John says, shouldn't this be exactly the kind of opportunity they need to exploit and conquer? Or are they drinking too much Betamate at the Rensen to have a spine to do so?
I think they're doing everything they can to exploit it without being unprofessional. Because you know what? next month, this could be GM in the soup.
Yeah, I mean, something. Yeah.
I thought the $1,000 rebates from GM, Ford, and Hyundai, and Chrysler. Chrysler has it on trucks and minivans. That was towing the line and getting as aggressive as you can be without being gaudy or ghoulish or.
There's no high-fiving going on from other car companies over Toyota's plate. Believe me, everybody thinks they've all been there. Yeah, everybody thinks that's going on, but it's not. Believe me, they understand and they wince because they know it could be them next time.
They also are rubbing their hands at the opportunity to steal some buyers.
Well, sure, but
this is capitalism.
Yeah. I was a little bit dismayed. Wasn't unexpected. But a Toyota spokesperson a couple days ago threw in the other automakers in that there's a lot of issues the other ones are having. I'm going, woo, you know, they're playing pretty good ball with you, so don't agitate them.
I think Toyota's just handled this so badly, I can't.
They got to hire Jason.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been through more of a ringer in the automotive business than anybody with the Ford Firestone.
It got so bad, I thought they were going to hire Jim Pressback.
Sean Walsh from GWU, which I believe is George Washington University in Washington, says, since Jason is on tonight, I thought it appropriate to ask if the snow we're having in the D.C. area is God's punishment for what the federal government inflicted on Detroit last year. What do we need to do to show our repentance?
He's absolutely right. it's kind of funny that this saying this is a once-in-a-lifetime storm. When I lived in Washington from 93 to 96, working for Andy Card at the Alliance. On our house hunting trip there in 93, 2 days before, there was 2 feet of snow in Northern Virginia and Washington. A year later, they had the hottest summer on record and then the coldest winter on record in Washington, D.C. So I don't think God's a part of this. God will punish the Democrats, though.
I like this. I got a friend in Utah at Snowbird, you know, a great ski resort, and he said, a blizzard of biblical proportions? He says, up here in Snowbird, we call that Monday. Okay, Paul Reese says, it seems to me that the senators from Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi represent the Japanese and the Koreans very effectively. Have they forgotten they are U.S. senators and not Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky senators?
Yeah, well, that was pretty obvious when the Detroit car companies were in front of Washington. I mean, it was a witch hunt, and Richard, they don't call me Dick for nothing, Shelby, was up there, you know, and Mitch McConnell, the guy, and I blast him in my column. This is, as you pointed out, was at the DAC.
No, it was at the Opus One.
Yeah, but originally, he was at the DAC, and then there was a dinner, and he's got his hand out.
I wrote him a check. I sat next to Bill Ford. He wrote him a check.
And 3 years later, he's, you know, saying, you know, Detroit must die, and it's just,
I sent him an email saying I want my $1,000 back.
Yeah.
How did he respond?
Oh, they don't respond. That's the biggest joke, saying you can write your congressman.
Yeah, there's some staffer doing this.
Especially when you're asking for money back.
Yeah, some flunky gets back to you.
The fact is, because these Toyota's important to their states, they may act humane and fair and get to a real question and get to real answers. What we saw from Shelby and the gang was just the most disgraceful thing, and our guys just sat there and played rope-a-dope.
By the way,
because they needed money.
Inside Toyota, all the Congress people from Toyota states, where they either manufacture or have operation, inside Toyota, they refer to that as the Toyota Caucus. Huh. And there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of examples of how they've helped them out. I mean, you know, I did a cover story on this a few years ago. Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia, they've got the big engine plant in Buffalo, West Virginia. You know, Toyota, and this doesn't go under lobby money. This goes under philanthropy. They donated, I think it was $1 million to the Blanchett Rockefeller School of Neuroscience at West Virginia University. And then I believe Jay was one of the sponsors of the hybrid tax credit in 2001 or thereabouts. So
a lot of details, David. Very interesting.
Tight relationships between Toyota and politicos.
A lot of what happens in these committees, it's not the Congress people themselves, it's their staffers and what they do to whip up stuff in the media leading up to it. In Ford Firestone, Billy Tozen's guy was Ken Johnson, who was one of the biggest horses patoots of all time, who loved to read about himself in the press and would throw out the most ridiculous claims. He threw Goodyear tires under the bus a day before. And so Goodyear was like, we haven't had a problem, but he just faulty garbage for sensationalism. So, you know, Toyota, they better have their people ready to answer every question imaginable. They better get that information to the staffers in advance so they're not being asked stupid questions like was done to the big three, just stupid 1970s questions.
But let's get ready for some of these senators with plants, you know, in their states going up and giving a little pre-mumble about, well, you know, that they've been such good citizens in our state. And, as, you know, I can see this coming a mile away.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, we've got some phone calls. Ben, let's start with the one from Mike Western.
Hi, my name is Mike Western, Public Relations Department at the Detroit Three have encountered such a difficult time in persuading the American public that the Detroit Three are viable companies and that the American government should support those companies, and how this can be remedied. In other words, how can the Public Relations Department do a better job in that regard? Thank you.
Yeah, how do you convince the American public that, well, Big Three quality is decent?
Well, first of all, Big Three quality has to be decent. The cars have to be good. And that was the beautiful thing for Toyota all these years when I was either at Ford or Chrysler. You'd just say the laziest PR people in the world were the Toyota people. And no, I have lots of friends, Toyota people, but all they had to do was sit back. Didn't have to answer any questions, just drive the car. They're great. They're fabulous. What a value. And we had to work and work and show how sexy our cars were and then have to listen to Consumer Reports crap all over them or have the media. We'd recall 20,000 vehicles and look at the quality in Toyota. I wrote a blog about that when I was at Chrysler. They recall 100,000 vehicles and look how they're taking care of their customers.
Is this your WTF, where's the fairness?
Usually WTF is taken for something else online.
But Irv Miller goes, nice shot, Jace. Irv was the head of Toyota PR. I think that type of behavior has been wiped out now.
Well, it used to be, and I wrote about this in my book, it used to be Toyota equals good, Detroit equals bad. That was the formula that's been ingrained in the American consumer for three decades, and that's gone now.
Part of it was the media, too.
The media.
Bad?
Yeah.
It was always Detroit automakers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we just got, we couldn't catch a break. Well, now they better take advantage of this gift they've been giving and better run real hard, and I'll give it to Ford and GM in particular, that they're running a lot harder. They got some great products out there.
Yeah, they do.
Chrysler, really, they should bow to the West every morning and thank Toyota for keeping them out of the headlines.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because last month, they were the only ones that had sales go down. When the market's starting to recover, they would be first and front on bad news about Chrysler, and they're getting a pass right now, so they've gotten a little bit of time to really get their stuff going. I know Ralph.
How are they going to do that, though?
Well, but nobody's talking about can Chrysler make it. A month ago, that's what we were talking about. Can Chrysler hang on for the 2 years?
Is that really a good
thing? Well, you know, they just announced a 60-day. Chrysler just announced a 60-day guarantee.
Oh, in the minivan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, a comment from George from Brooklyn. Toyota could have used the Super Bowl to push an ad campaign to quell the firestorm. A missed opportunity?
I thought they debuted that new commercial either post-game or something.
I think that was the wrap yourself in the American flag?
The commitment campaign.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on Saturday.
Toyota ran it during the post-game show.
Yeah, okay.
They ran it during the post-game show, but not during the actual Super Bowl.
Okay, a little bit off Toyota for the moment. Comment from Roger Will. Thoughts on the refreshed or the freshened Ford Edge?
I think it's really good. I think it's really, really good, and I've seen it in person, and the pictures don't do justice what they did to that. You know, Ford is starting to look like the Japanese used to be, where they have a design, and they don't reinvent it. They just keep tweaking it, and Ford on these mid-year refreshenings are doing them better than anybody in the business right now.
My wife just bought a Fusion a couple weeks ago. She loves it. Just loves it.
But the new Edge, and I can't wait to drive it with the new the four-cylinder, the direct injection.
EcoBoost. Yeah. Right. That's going to be awesome, I think. I hope it is. It's got the potential to be. But the other thing that anybody who really wants to check out the Edge, they did a nice job of refreshing the exterior. You got to see the interior.
Yeah, the interior.
Especially the instrument panel. It really is impressive.
Spectacular.
I mean, Ford's got some good mojo going on in interior design on that vehicle. Rumblestrip wants to know, for Jason, did the family relationships between Ford and Firestone complicate matters?
Oh, absolutely.
Because of the intermarriage in the families.
Billy Ford's mother...
Is a Firestone.
And that made it difficult. And he was quoted saying, to see these two great industrial icons fighting, it really did break his heart, even though Firestone didn't own Firestone anymore. They were owned by Bridgestone. I mean, by my office, if you'd walk the executive halls, you see all these pictures of Henry Ford and Edison and Harvey Firestone sitting by a campfire with rifles and cigarettes. And you're thinking, wow, that's incredible. And to see them, 100-year relationship at the time, just go down the tubes was really, really sad. But remember, Bridgestone bought Firestone in a fire sale based on the first tread separation problem, the Firestone 500, which was handled exactly the same way by Firestone. Blame the customer, blame everybody else, and finally get your head handed to you. And then they got in trouble in the mid-90s and cut back on quality.
Can't someone write a manual on how to handle a nasty safety recall, because the same mistakes get made over and over again?
It depends on who's running the show.
I mean,
you can write the book and get Zondervan to publish it.
Okay, I will. Actually, John Harmon has written a book called Feeding Frenzy about it, kind of a PR perspective on the Ford Firestone, and it's really pretty good.
Okay, Espo says, Peter, Toyota simple fix for its unintended acceleration, put OnStar on all of them, and it'll slow them down and stop them like when a GM car is stolen.
Well, aren't they? There's a question about all the other manufacturers have the electronic override on the...
Not everybody.
But
everybody. And even within automakers, it can vary.
But
Honda and Toyota were, I understand, the two who didn't have an automatic.
I can guarantee you that Subaru does not either. We've been testing a lot of the cars that we get here. Take it up to 50 miles an hour, floor it, count to three, and then slam on the brake and see if you can bring the car to the stop.
While flooring it.
Yes.
While flooring.
Really?
Yeah.
I told John the other day, when Jeep was having its problem back in the early to mid-90s, we proved on camera that you can have your foot on the floor of the accelerator, and if you have the brake patch down all the way, the vehicle will not move. And likewise, if you're going down the highway at 50, 60 miles an hour, you can keep your foot on the gas and stomp on that brake and hold it, and the vehicle will come to a stop.
Yeah. I've done it with one car. I did it with a Nissan, and it worked right.
Well, like I said, it varies by manufacturer, and even within manufacturers, it varies on lines. It's all over the map, and that's why the one thing that will come out of this Toyota thing is a law that says you must have a brake override. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. a software fix. It's not that big. Hey, we got another phone call. Ben, let's bring in the one from Frank.
Hi, guys. This is Frank in West Haven, Connecticut. My question for tonight is, what do you think the long-term effects on Toyota's residual values is going to be? I've noticed that Kelly Blue Book has downgraded them a little bit in the last week or so. I'm wondering if you think this is going to last for the long term, and if this might give the domestics a chance to pick up their residual values. Thank you.
That's already happening.
Yes. Yeah, well, as he said, Toyotas have gone down anywhere from, if I remember right, $200 to $500.
I heard one was $700.
Wow. And now that's part of the class action lawsuits. There's dozens and dozens of class action lawsuits, but one of them is now attacking him for use.
When I left the office, I think it was 46 class 46. Action lawsuits, including Canada.
Wow. So, very interesting. In fact, we got another Toyota-related one. Ben, let's bring in the phone call from Joey.
Joey Agresti from Boynton Beach, Florida. The L.A. Times reported late last year that after the advent of electronic throttle controls in the 2002-2004 era, the complaints against Toyota were 5 times more than prior to the electronic throttle control being introduced, and they exceeded the total of all the other manufacturers combined. Also, NHTSA did investigate electronic interference through a consultant in the last 2 years, and the report of that consultant was issued, but it was heavily redacted, and it was determined that electromagnetic interference could increase the RPMs of the engine by 1,000 RPMs. This is all reported in the LA Times, so I'd like to hear a discussion of that. Thanks.
Well, you're going to see that on Capitol Hill. They're going to take that article, because that's what they did during Ford Firestone. They take stuff out of newspapers and say, is this true, is this true? They're going to take that document that the gentleman, Joey, said was redacted and probably unredacted.
Yeah.
And if we're going to see, that's what...
Well, this is very interesting what he brings up.
Well, there is a pattern.
Yeah, there is a pattern. And like I said, I'm willing to be convinced that it's an ETC problem. But I'm also saying that it could also just be driver error.
I don't think it's all driver error. Okay. I mean, there may be, I think now that, by the way, it's 47 cases now. Our legal writer, Margaret Cronin Fisk, updates me every time a new one is filed. Thanks, Peg. We're at 47. Ramos versus Toyota Motor Sales, Miami-Dade County. But no, when you have cases piling up like this, some of them are a driver error, and somebody screwed up, and they're going to say, well, I'm going to sue Toyota because, you get the people lining up. But you can't have this many recalls and this many problems, and I'll be down to dry. I just don't buy it. Something's wrong.
Well, there's one other thing, too, that we didn't get to, is this ex-Toyota lawyer, Dimitrios Biller, who has been spilling his guts that, he used to work for Toyota. Now he's saying, oh, they covered up all this data. They destroyed evidence of rollovers. Toyota just got a temporary injunction against him that he can't give out confidential information on the company. But, Jason, what do you do? I mean, I don't know if this guy's legit or if he's a problem employee. You know, how do you
See,
call
you
that?
You don't know that. Chrysler had a guy named Paul Sheridan. Who?
I remember.
Yeah,
that.
He thought he should have been CEO of the company. He was a lower to middle guy working on the minivans, I believe. And he was disgruntled. Thought he should be CEO, and got fired or quit the company. And then he became a star witness.
I actually heard it. He thought he should have been head of PR.
Well, that's a higher position than CEO.
A higher calling.
No, but, I mean, you'd see some of the things he would say in depositions, and he wasn't in a position to have known about this stuff.
Yeah.
And he really, and it really is damning. You don't know. So this guy may be a total charlatan. He may be just a disgruntled guy who got fired for the right reasons, and he's a nutcase. Or maybe he's the smoking gun.
Yeah. We'll have to see.
We might see him on Capitol Hill.
Scotty in Cleveland wants to know if anyone saw David Welch on the PBS NewsHour the other night. You were on there talking about Toyota?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Two other people saw him.
Hey, now, this is Blair NewsHour.
Yeah, it was McNeil Edler. and this will be the last one. We'll wrap it up. Comment from George from Brooklyn again. Any truth to Ralph Gilles' claim that the Fiat 500 will be on sale in North America by Christmas?
I don't know. No way.
I don't know.
If Ralph claimed it, I would say he is in a position to know. Yeah.
And he's an upstanding guy. I hope he's not.
I didn't see this.
I believe that's right. I believe because all along they said it was going to take 2 years to homologate it to U.S. emission and safety standards. And I'm pretty sure they started in January of 2009. So you go January of 2009 to December 2010, that's about 2 years.
They were saying they were getting it down to 18 months total.
Okay.
Well, he said at the Chicago Auto Show that it was going to be a 2011 model.
Okay. Well, that starts in October, right? And that one,
I think it's a cool little car. I mean, I'm a Mini owner, so take my bias, but if you sat in one, the interior is really cool.
Yeah.
But how do they get it?
Honestly, the exterior is not.
What are they going to call it? Because if you have a 300 that's a full-size car.
That is a problem. I've been asking
this question.
You
have a 500 that's a micro car.
And then you've got a 200, which is their electric, you know, the body for the electric car.
Sergio said they're never going to build the 200.
They're not going to build the electric car. But that body for that electric car concept that they showed supposedly is very close to the next Sebring, which could be called the 200.
So it's going to screw up our kids on how to count.
Well, at the Bataan Death March, Sergio said that car, the 200, was designed.
You're talking about the 8-hour press conference?
Oh, yeah, God. Right.
Oh, well, yeah. Seeing how we're with Toyota tonight, I thought that was somewhat inappropriate.
Yeah. Oops, a Freudian slip there. Okay, this will be the last one. I promise you this will be the last one. Ask Jason to talk a bit about the PR professional's relationship with the company he works for. I'd like to hear what Jason thinks about mediating between a technical company and the public and the government.
Wow, I'm a firm believer, and I'll take this to my grave. PR is a social conscience of the company. You have to stand for not being a spin doctor. I hate that term. You have to stand for open, honest communication and foster that and make everybody else in the company do it, or you get burned. Somewhere along the line, you're going to get burned. A PR person that proves to be a liar is no good to anyone. You'll never trust them. You won't go to them. But I'm not sure that's the case. It's certainly not the case everywhere. I don't believe, for instance, Chrysler PR has the standing it used to have. It really was up there at every meeting, and I think they've lost that, and I hope they can get it back. I think Ford has a seat at the table, the PR people there. Mullally listens. Mullally's smart. I believe Whitaker has given PR a seat at the table. I don't think Toyota did not have a seat at the table. I think they might be getting close.
Well, there's two tables.
Yeah, they're at the little kids' table.
Yeah.
So we'll just see. Ghosn, big believer in PR. PR had a seat at the table, and there, when you allow your PR people to do what they're supposed to do, they can help the company.
As being the conscience of the company.
And, you know, whenever anybody would call me a spin doctor, I go, whoa, that means you don't understand public relations. Spinning, which came out of the Clinton administration, that term spin doctor, it was basically another form of lying. You can't lie as a PR person. Yeah. Your credibility is gone. You're dead.
Bill was taken to the hospital tonight. He's had a couple stents put in.
I saw that just before I got in here. Hey, well, we're at the top of the hour, but we should wrap it up here. It's been great having you back, Jason. It's been a great topic to have you back for it, too. The perfect person to come in to talk about crisis management. And David, great having you here as always.
Good to be here.
The man with all the facts and the figures and the latest news, and Peter with his insight. Thank all of you for tuning in, too. I hope you found this discussion pretty worthwhile.
Visit our website, OuterLineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Outerline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Outerline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at OuterLineDetroit.tv.